Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 374, titled Between Iraq and a Hard Place, being recorded on August 25th of 2002. If the things that I talk about in this program seem strange, or if the format is overly pedantic, I appreciate that. Within a week of the recording, and this is August 25th, there will be a detailed annotated description of For the Record Program 374 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Text will be excerpted and the sources meticulously noted. And in addition to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website, which, by the way, is equipped with real audio, sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is archiving the For the Record programs on real audio. More recent programs are streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word. Older programs are available for download only on real audio at a longer URL that is linked to both the wfmu.org/Dave Emery website and the Spitfire website. Now, the war drums have been being beaten in the Middle East, and we're going to be taking a look at two countries which are adversaries of the United States, one of which is ostensibly an ally, the other of which has been roundly demonized, and yet the overt cause of the demonization remains somewhat obscured. The hard place is Saudi Arabia, and Iraq is Iraq. We're going to touch on both countries right now. The Financial Times of Wednesday, August 21st of 2002, had an article that deals with the alleged reaction of Saudi high rollers to a recent lawsuit in the United States. This alleges that Saudi Arabian elite have been pulling their money out of the United States. This has recently been disputed by, among others, Prince Walid, Al-Walid, rather, a nephew of King Fahd. This article is by Rula Khalaf, R-O-U-L-A, last name capital K-H-A-L-A-F, in London. It's headlined, Saudis Pull Billions out of the U.S. The subhead is, Shift of Funds Reflects Kingdom's Growing Disenchantment with America Since September 11th. Disgruntled Saudis have pulled tens of billions of dollars out of the U.S., signaling a growing disenchantment with America. One analyst said the total funds withdrawn by individual investors in the kingdom amounted to $200 billion. Other bankers put the figure nearer to $100 billion. The U.S.-Saudi alliance was put under severe strain after September 11th when 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudi nationals. Accusations that Saudi Arabia's austere brand of Islam breeds terrorism and that its charities finance Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda network have been perceived in the kingdom as attacks on Saudi society and its religion. An analyst from the RAND Corporation said at a Pentagon briefing this month that Saudi Arabia was the kernel of evil, unquote, exacerbating concerns among the country's elite that they have become demonized in the U.S. and that their money is no longer safe there. As part of the fight against terrorism, the U.S. and Saudi authorities have been monitoring the accounts of dozens of Saudi companies and individuals, a move that has alarmed Saudi merchants. Youssef Ibrahim, a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations working on a project re-examining U.S.-Saudi relations, said Saudis had withdrawn at least $200 billion from the U.S. in recent months. He said the move had been driven by hawkish U.S. commentators' calls for the freezing of Saudi assets. The trend, he added, could be expected to accelerate with last week's trillion-dollar lawsuit by relatives of the victims of September 11th. The lawsuit accuses several Saudi institutions and charities and three members of the royal family, including the defense minister, of financing terrorism. Skipping down. People no longer have any confidence in the U.S. economy or in U.S. foreign policy, said Bashir Bakhit, B-A-K-H-E-E-T, a financial consultant in Riyadh. Again quoting, and if the latest lawsuit is not thrown out in court, it will mean no more Saudi money in the U.S., unquote. And that, again, dealing with the report that a couple of $100 billion in Saudi investments in the United States are being pulled out. Well, the evidence linking powerful elements of the Saudi elite to the funding of al-Qaeda, as well as the funding of Hamas and terrorism that has been at the core of the growing Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the evidence is irrefutable, although it's being disputed by elements of the Saudi elite for obvious reasons. And as we've talked about in numerous broadcasts, there are also very profound business connections between the Saudi elite and the American elite, in particular, elements of the Bush administration, with George Bush himself having numerous business connections to the milieu not only of Al-Qaeda, but looking back even farther in time, the milieu of Al-Taqwa, or NADA management, which reaches back to what I call Islamofascism and some of the Arab and Middle Eastern connections to the Third Reich in its above ground and underground phases. Now, one of the countries that borders Saudi Arabia, which we have not been threatening with any sort of action, is, of course, Iraq, and that is a country that we have been threatening with a great deal of military action. This is not to say that Saudi Arabia or that Iraq is not a very evil country. It most definitely is. And like Saudi Arabia, there is no shortage of connections between the dealings of the Bush family and the dealings of the regime in power, the regime George W. wants to change. Bush's father, the elder George Bush, helped to oversee the arming of Iraq for its war against Iran in the 1980s, and some of the arms provided to Iraq appear to have included some of the elements of its biological and chemical warfare arsenal. We've talked about that in numerous programs in the past. Now, in connection with the war drums beating against Iraq, there have been a number of articles in the popular press that have maintained that George W., in the wake of September 11th, was briefed on a monstrous possibility that could arise in which Iraq would theoretically, at least, have been involved in something much worse than September 11th. It was said that this did not actually take place, nor was anything specific made out in these articles. One of the questions that I have, and I want to stress emphatically that this broadcast is interrogatory in nature, one of the questions that I have concerns the possibility, and again, the possibility that the foot and mouth disease outbreak in Great Britain and elsewhere in Europe, particularly in Britain, in the year 2001 may have been connected to biological warfare and perhaps, and again, this is purely speculative, an act of bioterrorism by Iraq. Any act of terrorism must obviously resonate psychologically, just as attacking the Pentagon and attacking the World Trade Center brought under attack two prominent symbols of the United States. I guess one could say that if one wanted to hit the American people in a sensitive spot, if you hit them in their burgers, so to speak, that would be a very sensitive place indeed. What we're going to do for much of the rest of the broadcast is to recapitulate a section of For the Record program number 295, recorded on April 26th of 2001. This deals with the foot and mouth outbreak in the United Kingdom and elsewhere in Europe. Now, in connection with the outbreak of foot and mouth in the United Kingdom, note the following. According to a UN report, Iraq has been stockpiling foot and mouth disease as part of its biological warfare program. The strain that broke out in the United Kingdom was the South Asian strain, which had only been found in the Middle East and Pakistan, as well as India. It had never been seen in Europe. Obviously, Iraq is in the Middle East, and we now know that Al-Qaeda has had profound links to the Pakistani elite and the Pakistani intelligence service, the sponsors of the Taliban in many ways, that relationship long-standing and profound. I would also note that the Iraqi Biological Warfare Development Program was initially termed the Department of Veterinary Affairs. Obviously, foot and mouth disease is a disease, like anthrax, by the way, of cattle or native to cattle. It can sometimes spread to human beings. I would also note that the overseer of Saddam Hussein's BW program, the Department of Veterinary Affairs, unquote, was none other than Khairullah al-Tufa, Saddam Hussein's uncle, his political mentor, and a key aide to Ali Rashid in the anti-British pro-Nazi uprising in Iraq that took place in 1941. Again, Khairullah al-Tufa, a supporter of Germany and of the Nazis, a bitter opponent of the British, and Khairullah al-Tufa was an aide to the Grand Mufti, or certainly aided the Grand Mufti, who was at the center of the anti-British uprising, as we looked at in, among other programs, For the Record 369. So, again, noting the speculative nature of this inquiry, one of the things that I wonder about is the possibility that the foot and mouth outbreak in the United Kingdom may have been an Iraqi retaliation for U.S. and British airstrikes against Iraq. And I wonder, and again this is speculation, to what extent that outbreak may be one of the things that is bothering George W. Bush, one of the contingencies that so alarmed him. And I also wondered about the extent to which his father's culpability in the arming of Saddam Hussein, including apparently the channeling of BW weapons to Saddam Hussein, may be one of the reasons why W. and company are reluctant to discuss this possibility. Again, this is speculative in nature, but with the war drums sounding very loudly, I think this is a point of discussion worth reviewing. The following is from For the Record 295 from April 26th of 2001. What we're going to do now is to take a look at an op-ed column that appeared in the San Jose Mercury News this past week. And this op-ed column, interestingly enough, speculates about bioterrorism and specifically discusses the mad cow epidemic, not mad cow, but the foot and mouth epidemic in the United Kingdom, although the individual stresses that there's no evidence that the appearance of mad cow in the United Kingdom is the result of bioterrorism. And I would add to that, I would not rule out that possibility. I suspect that reading between the lines, this particular analyst may very well believe the same thing, or at least may be speculating inside, at least, between the lines about the same thing. This is from the San Jose Mercury News of Tuesday, April 24th of the year 2001. It's by Charles Dulfer, D-U-E-L-F-E-R, who's a guest scholar at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and ex-deputy chair of the UN Special Commission on Iraq. And this article was written for the Los Angeles Times. This article is headlined, "If an enemy attacks, will we know it?" And the article reads in part as follows. Could the United States be at war and not know it? The current outbreak of foot and mouth disease in the United Kingdom makes one wonder. Not about Britain's plight specifically, there's nothing to suggest that the epidemic there is an act of war. But consider how quickly and easily it has spread. Then, consider a regime such as Iraq's, which has demonstrated a commitment to developing biological weapons. Might such a nation find it advantageous to strike anonymously and biologically by spreading an economically devastating disease or a slow-acting toxin? This is not an abstract question. The Iraqi regime insists that the economic sanctions imposed on it are nothing less than a genocidal attack by the United States and the United Kingdom. The regime has said it is still fighting the Persian Gulf War and that it will respond to the plight of the Palestinians. I would add in previous For the Record programs, I've dealt with Gulf War syndrome and the research by Dr. Garth Nicholson that a fair number of the GIs suffering from Gulf War syndrome have been infected with an apparently genetically altered infectious microorganism called a mycoplasma, which appears to have had the protein gene from the AIDS virus spliced into it, and which in turn was apparently given to the Iraqis by American biotechnologically capable elements, and that it was apparently used by the Iraqis on GIs in the Gulf War. Happily, those GIs who are suffering from mycoplasma-related Gulf War syndrome are treatable through a cycle of drugs that are readily available. However, some of those drugs are not being, anyway, some of the GIs have not been treated with those particular agents that are available. So the disease goes unabated in some who are suffering from it. And I would also note that some of the Gulf War syndrome appears to be contagious, and that would certainly not be the case with a chemical agent or with a disease caused by depleted uranium. Doxycycline, among other antibiotics, does apparently treat the mycoplasma-related Gulf War syndrome, and again, that would suggest biological warfare. Skipping down in this particular article, And if a slow-developing disease can't be linked to the event that triggered it, how can a country prevent such attacks? How can it respond? Science might be able to address part of this problem. Subtle differences in varieties of biological agents can be analyzed and traced to certain regions. Other effects might have signatures that can be observed in victims. Christine Gosden, G-O-S-D-E-N, a professor of medical genetics at the University of Liverpool, has been conducting a program of research and humanitarian assistance in the northern regions of Iraq, where the population and environment might have been subjected to biological weapons in addition to chemical ones. So again, note here that even in the event that a biological warfare attack had gone undetected, a slow-developing disease can be analyzed with regard to subtle differences and genetic differences at that in biological varieties of these particular agents. And we're going to note that for present purposes in a couple of different respects. In the first place, I want to note that Iraq has been developing, according to a recent UN investigation, it has been developing foot and mouth disease. We're going to review an article that we looked at in the aforementioned For the Record program number 287, titled, Don't Put Your Foot in Your Mouth When Talking About Mad Cow Disease, and That's No Bull. This article is from the Financial Times of March 2nd of the year 2001. It's by the Financial Times International staff. It's headlined, Missiles and Viruses Still Trouble Experts. And this is about a United Nations group that has been inspecting for biological and other weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The UN inspection group is called UNMOVIC. I'm not sure how that's pronounced. UNMOVIC, that's how I'll pronounce it. UNMOVIC. And this article reads in part as follows. Missiles, biological weapons, and chemical weapons form the three main areas of concern outlined in a classified report on Iraq by UNMOVIC, the United Nations Arms Inspections Group. UNMOVIC is a group of weapons experts and inspectors set up in late 1999 by the UN Security Council to succeed UNSCOM, the controversial former inspection body for Iraq, which was disbanded after it withdrew from the country in December of 1998. And skipping down about Iraq's apparent biological warfare research, Iraq's research into viruses, including polio, influenza, foot and mouth disease, the camel pox virus, infectious hemorrhagic conjunctivitis virus, and rotavirus was also worrying. So note that a recent UN inspection body was concerned about Iraqi research into foot and mouth disease. I would also note in that same context that the strain of foot and mouth disease that has broken out in the United Kingdom is one that is native to the Middle East. This article, and again, this was in For the Record program number 287, this article is from the San Jose Mercury News of Friday, March 30th of 2001. It's an AP story by Emma Ross. It's Dateline London and headlined, Foot and Mouth Trots Around the Globe, subtitled, Most Contagious Disease in World is Widespread. Scientists track strains but can't trace pathways. And skipping down, experts have identified the virus causing the outbreak in Europe as belonging to the Pan-Asia Type 0 strain. The subtype ravaging Britain is normally found in the Middle East and South Asia. I would note in this context that shortly before the outbreak began in the United Kingdom, British and American air forces attacked Iraq and did so shortly after after George Bush became president of the United States. So note that Iraq had, according to the United Nations, been doing research into foot and mouth disease. Note that shortly before the outbreak began in the United Kingdom, the U.S. and Britain had attacked Iraq. And note also that as we looked at in For the Record number 287, not only was the Iraqi biological warfare program incorporated in part or engendered in part by Karula al-Tufa, Saddam Hussein's Nazi-affiliated uncle,
But the Kerala al-Tufa, who was Saddam Hussein's political mentor, was fiercely anti-British. We've looked at Kerala al-Tufa's political ideology in For the Record program number 87, and also in the aforementioned 287, and we're going to review another aspect of the Iraqi biological warfare program, the fact that it was initially the official Iraqi purchasing agency for biological agents was called the General Directorate of Veterinary Services, whether or not that's relevant. It certainly is interesting, and it may be relevant. We're going to review a couple of sections now from the book The Death Lobby by Kenneth Timmerman. We looked at this in both For the Record 87 and 287. And of the Iraqi Biological Warfare Development Program at its genesis with the General Directorate of Veterinary Services, we read, Iraq's first attempt to acquire biological weapons of this kind seemed innocent enough. The committee turned to a trusted Ba'athist, Izzat al-Dhuri, then serving on the ruling Revolutionary Command Council as Minister of Agriculture. On November 2, 1974, al-Dhuri signed a contract with the Paris-based Institut Mérieux to set up Iraq's first bacteriological laboratory. The Iraqis explained that they needed to be able to manufacture large quantities of vaccines in order to develop agricultural and animal production. The official Iraqi purchasing agency was called the General Directorate of Veterinary Services. Skipping down, of the involvement of Khairullah al-Tufa with the General Directorate of Veterinary Services and with the Iraqi BW program, bear in mind that he was fiercely anti-British and had fought with the Nazis in an anti-British uprising during World War II. Al-Dhuri's success won him a promotion and made him a de facto member of the team. The three-man strategic planning committee, along with Saddam himself, his uncle, Khairullah al-Tufa, and Adnan Habdani. By the end of the year, he was shifted to the Ministry of the Interior, all the while retaining his responsibilities for, quote, agricultural, unquote, development. That, again, from the Death Lobby by Kenneth Timmerman, and that passage, once again, was discussed in For the Record program number 87, and also in For the Record program number 287. Interestingly and perhaps significantly, foot and mouth is now, according to the British press, beginning to affect humans. Now, I want to stress that I'm not a veterinarian. I'm certainly not an expert on foot and mouth disease. But all of the previous accounts that I had read, and I've read many accounts of the foot and mouth outbreak in Europe, stressed that there was no danger to humans, that this was not a disease that could be communicated to human beings. Now, it would appear that that assessment is at best premature. And once again, this is a fact that raises more questions than it answers. Once again, what I call food for thought and grounds for further research. The following article is from the Financial Times of Tuesday, April 24th of the year 2001. This article is by Michael Mann and Kathy Newman in London. The article is headlined, Suspected Human Foot and Mouth Case Hits Government Campaign. The article reads in part as follows. Government hopes of persuading tourists back to the countryside suffered a serious setback yesterday when a slaughter man in northwest England was suspected of catching foot and mouth disease. The Department of Health said a man involved in the mass cull in Cambria was suffering blistering, which indicated he had become infected with the disease, although final results from medical tests would not be available for a day or two. The news came as the government faced growing concern about the health risks of burning carcasses on mass funeral pyres and seemed certain to undermine last week's claim that the epidemic was now fully under control, unquote. The government has always maintained the risk to humans from foot and mouth is minimal and, with many tourist businesses on the brink of collapse, has urged people to return to rural areas. Skipping down, Peter Ainsworth, culture spokesman for the opposition Conservative Party, said that if the case was confirmed, it would be a, quote, massive setback to the recovery of British tourism, unquote, as some Americans and other visitors who mistakenly believe foot and mouth is a serious risk to human health would decide to stay away. Quote, it's a further massive dent to the image of British tourism at a time when we can ill afford it, unquote, Mr. Ainsworth said. Horrible pun there, by the way. Skipping down yet again, This is incredibly rare, said a Department of Health spokesman. The symptoms are relatively mild and it should respond well to treatment and clear up quickly, unquote. Well, again, I'm not a veterinarian. I'm certainly not an expert on foot and mouth disease, but the many accounts that I had read stressed that this was a disease that could only affect animals, that there was no danger to humans. Perhaps those journalists were incompletely informed. But again, whatever the significance of this, it should be noted that in addition, obviously, to the meat industry and the animal husbandry industry in the United Kingdom, this is also going to affect the tourism industry there as well, adversely affecting the country. The next day's Financial Times, that being Wednesday, April 25th of the year 2001, had a follow-up article, and there are a couple of more suspected human cases of foot and mouth disease. This article is by John Mason and Kathy Newman, as well as Michael Mann in London. It's headlined, Livestock Disease Suspected in More Humans. Two more suspected cases of foot and mouth disease being transmitted to humans were being investigated by the Department of Health yesterday, as the government's handling of the crisis was strongly criticized by leading independent scientists. Results from the first suspected case involving a slaughterman in Cumbria, northwest England, are due shortly. Officials said the circumstances in which he may have caught the infection were highly unusual and proved there was no cause for concern. The man was moving a decomposing carcass when it exploded. Well, again, I'm certainly not an expert on foot and mouth disease, but one of the questions I have, and this is obviously speculative, I wonder whether perhaps this outbreak in the United Kingdom is indeed the result of bioterrorism, whoever may have been involved, whether the Iraqis, some other element associated with the Underground Reich, or whoever. And I would note that the Underground Reich, as I have called it, embraces many elements. It would involve elements of the Iraqi establishment. It would involve elements of the contemporary American government and many other elements around the world. So there are a number of possible culprits. I wonder whether perhaps the foot and mouth outbreak currently afflicting the United Kingdom is indeed the result of bioterrorism, and whether perhaps it might be a genetically altered strain of that particular disease. And again, this is obviously speculative in nature.
That again from For the Record 295, recorded on April 26th of 2001. The various programs that I've done over the years are available from Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com, one word. And within a week or so of this program, there will be a detailed annotated description of For the Record Program 374 in the For the Record section of the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. There are also links in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website to two URLs maintained by sister station WFMU-FM. That station is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery, one word. And older programs are available for download only on a longer URL linked to both the Spitfire and the other WFMU.org/Dave Emery website. This concludes For the Record program number 374, being recorded on August 25th of 2002. Between Iraq and a Hard Place, my name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.